We're back here on the Urology Care Podcast. Our guest today is Dr. Karen Boyle. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I am a urologist with Chesapeake Urology here in Baltimore. We're part of the National United Urology Group, and I specialize in a number of different things than the typical urologist. So I specialize in male fertility, as well as male and female sexual health and genital reconstruction, as well as genital aesthetics. So, and I know today we're interested in talking specifically about female sexual dysfunction, which is definitely wonderful because it is a topic that often it gets overlooked and definitely deserves to be spoken about more.
And can you just start off by telling us about what some common sexual issues are that affect women?
Female sexual dysfunction is actually reportedly more common than we even see in our male population. So up to 40 to 43%, depending upon the study of women, at some point in their life will experience sexual dysfunction. And we know in our male population, you know, it's as high as 30%. And women's issues are similar to those that we talk about in men. So women will have issues with inhibited desire, or decreased sexual desire. Women will have difficulty with arousal, which is most notably lack of lubrication, which can lead to vaginal dryness and vaginal pain. Women can have issues with orgasm. And it's not abnormal necessarily that women have difficulty achieving orgasm with typical vaginal penetration, but some women can't even achieve a normal orgasm with direct clitoral stimulation. And then there are the pain disorders, you know, related to different endometrial or pelvic issues, vaginitis, vaginismus, vaginal dryness, postmenopausal issues, and hypoactive sexual desire disorder. So there's a whole host of issues on the female side. Some are related to very serious medical conditions, you know, as a result of cancer, chemotherapy, radiation, depression, medication, post-pregnancy issues. But then there's some primary issues with female sexual health, you know, that need to be recognized, worked up, you know, with evaluation, and that we can treat.
Can you go into what some of the causes might be of some common sexual issues in women?
Sure. So, you know, that probably in and of itself could be a podcast because there's a whole host of things. I mean, definitely underlying serious medical diseases can cause problems, you know, like somebody who has been through cancer treatment or has had different surgeries specifically to their abdomen or pelvic area, you know, but things hormonally, I think, are the first that come to mind. So definitely in our perimenopausal or postmenopausal patient population, so women that have a lack of estrogen, have abnormal testosterone levels, who are suffering from vaginal atrophy, that definitely is something that we see commonly. But then there's this whole host of premenopausal sexual dysfunction issues that, you know, we'll see with sexual desire that necessarily aren't hormonally driven, but can be caused by some abnormalities sort of in the brain with dopamine, norepinephrine, those kinds of things. Issues vaginally, so you can have inflammation of the vagina, irritation of some of the vestibular glands that can cause pain, endometriosis, vaginismus is a primary pain disorder that women, you know, will experience. So there's a lot. I mean, there are a lot of different things. And obviously, you know, historically, I think women, from a sexual health perspective, people automatically seem to go to the emotional, the psychological, which definitely can be part of it too, but that by no means should be the first thing we think of. But definitely, you know, mood disorders, emotional stresses, anxiety, stress, depression, history of sexual abuse or sexual assault can cause problems. But I would definitely say the most common things that I, you know, will see and think about and talk about are the hormonal disturbances, the neurotransmitter issues in the brain, you know, along with the hormonal disturbances, thyroid dysfunction can be one of the big ones. But then just like in our male population with erectile dysfunction, diabetes, heart disease, and those chronic systemic illness states can cause dysfunction on the female side as well.
What are some common treatment options for sexual dysfunction in women?
So again, that depends upon, you know, the underlying problem. So, you know, if you want to break it down, there's definitely not as much on the female side from an FDA approved standpoint as we have in men. But if we look at, you know, one of the more common things like hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which, you know, we see in 10% of women. So that is specifically a disorder where women will have decreased interest in sexual activity, and they find it bothersome or just distressing. And it's going on for 3-4 months at least. With that, there is an FDA-approved medication called flibanserin. It is a medicine that works on the central nervous system in the brain. So it causes improvement in the dopamine and norepinephrine levels, and that can help with sexual, you know, response. So it's not the female Viagra, so it doesn't cause increased blood flow to the vulva or genital organs, but it can, in premenopausal women, help with sexual desire. So that is something that we have been excited about, that there's finally an FDA-approved medication. But we end up doing a fair amount of off-label therapies from a hormonal standpoint for postmenopausal women. So there is good data, although some of the data is mixed, in peri or postmenopausal women and androgen. So it's not as effective as it is in our male population. So a man that's diagnosed with low testosterone, for instance, and hypogonadism, if we replace and normalize his testosterone, a lot of his sexual desire symptoms and erectile dysfunction can improve. On the female side, it's not that black and white. However, we do have good response when we normalize hormones in women, but it's controversial. You know, hormone replacement in women historically because of some of the concerns regarding the GYN malignancies and breast cancer, but we can use off-label testosterone in women. Bioidentical hormones are being looked at in terms of different things that we can do. And some of the pain disorders specifically, we do have options for. So women who have vaginal atrophy and can take estrogen, it can be administered locally to the estrogen-sensitive tissues of the vagina and vulva, and that can improve mucosal health and help with lubrication naturally and help with some of the pain disorders. Women that cannot use estrogen or have some vaginal mucosal issues with either laxity or just tissue sensitivity, there are a number of vaginal laser therapies that are out now. We do offer something called Diva, which is a hybrid fractional laser that we're using intravaginally and around the vulva to help with the tissue quality and help stimulate collagen growth and rejuvenation, as well as mucosal health. So that's something new that is available. We often will use off-label sildenafil as a trial in women that have some orgasmic dysfunction. It's definitely not as effective in our female population as our male population, but it can help with drawing blood into the clitoris with stimulation. There is also a device called Eros, which is a clitoral vacuum device, which we will use. And there's a medication called Osfina, which can be used in women that can't use topical estrogens for vulvovaginal atrophy to help reduce pain. So that's some of it, but of course also sexual therapy, sexual counseling, those are some of the things that we're using to help, you know, with female sexual dysfunction. Pain disorders, sometimes we do intravaginal Botox for vaginismus, which is an involuntary contraction of the vaginal muscles and can cause pain. So women who have never been able to have penetrative intercourse or use a tampon will sometimes be diagnosed with vaginismus. So there are some good therapies for some of the vaginal pain disorders. And physical therapy and biofeedback are things that we use frequently for that as well. So working with dedicated pelvic floor physical therapists, as well as psychologists and sex therapists for sexual counseling, can be very effective.
There's a government agency called the Office of Women's Health. Is there anything you can tell me about it?
The Office of Women's Health is a government agency that will offer national leadership and coordination to help improve the health of women and young girls through advocating for policy, education, and model programs, many of which will include sexual health programs.
Has there been any important research in recent years about sexual dysfunction that patients might want to know about?
So the research on the female sexual dysfunction avenue is definitely not as robust as I would hope, especially at this point. I think that it is very optimistic that we finally have an FDA-approved medication, although much more research is needed. I think when we look at some of the different agencies that are dedicated toward female sexual health, and there are a number of them, especially within the American Urologic Association and some of the sexual health dedicated organizations that exist within the OBGYN and the urology community. The big thing is, number one, awareness and education so that women can have a voice with their physicians and practitioners to start a conversation. There's definitely need for research, though, and we need to have dedication to drug development and therapies, because right now, a lot of what has been studied and investigated is looking at off-label therapies like testosterone, like sildenafil. So there's that need. From a research perspective, I think some of the most exciting things that I have read about and that we've been involved with are some of these intravaginal laser therapies for some of the pain disorders like lichen sclerosus that can affect young women and women of all ages that have vulvar scar and significant pain. I think that is something that is exciting and that there's going to be more and more out to help improve vaginal health with different targeted vaginal therapies. But I think the place that I would love to see more research dedicated is the hormones. I think that there needs to be better research in androgens and their effect on female sexual health and vulvar response so that we're not having to resort to off-label therapies. But those studies are long and costly, and I'm hoping that with awareness and more dedicated practitioners and physicians that are interested in female sexual health, that we'll see this open up in the next 5 to 10 years.
I want to ask about mental and emotional issues, perhaps such as anxiety, depression, and even past sexual traumas. Can you talk about them and how they might be linked to sexual problems?
Sure. You know, those things are very real. You know, obviously women who have sustained genital trauma, sexual trauma, rape, abuse, molestation at whatever age, or even being in an unhealthy relationship with a partner, can cause significant sexual dysfunction. And specifically in those patients, it can cause, you know, body dysmorphia. It can cause women to really withdraw and not be able to even be advocates for themselves in terms of seeking help. And so, you know, dedicated psychologists and sex therapists, I think, are essential in assisting the urologists, the gynecologists, the family practitioners, and the internists that see these patients and getting them the help that they need, because people in general, but women, I think especially, do suffer in silence. I think primary disorders like anxiety and depression definitely are not uncommon triggers for sexual dysfunction in men and women. But by no means, I always hesitate to go right there as sort of the underlying explanation of female sexual dysfunction, but they definitely worsen symptoms and I think can create situations where women may not seek, you know, the help that they need. I think psychiatric illness in general, you know, people do get labeled, and, you know, if somebody has a primary anxiety disorder, you know, they may be overlooked in terms of getting the dedicated assistance they need to investigate their sexual health needs. So, you know, I think it's a collaborative approach that we have to have with our patients and our psychologists and sexual therapists. I think, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, biofeedback, physical therapy, all those practitioners can assist in helping patients that, you know, suffer from anxiety and depression. But it's one of those things as well, what comes first? You know, a lot of women that have suffered sexual trauma or are in unhealthy relationships can develop secondarily anxiety and depression as a result of those unhealthy relationships and abuse. And so, you know, I think the first thing is, for me, is always feeling very comfortable and having those conversations and asking the questions and opening that door. And I think the wonderful thing is a lot of women, because of the internet And because of programs like this and opportunities that they can safely investigate their own complaints and problems, I think that's opened the door for easier conversation for those women in safe places like the doctor's office or the therapist's office. So I'm optimistic because I do see a big paradigm shift in patients in general over the last decade that they are more comfortable in coming forward. But I think we always need to foster an environment of support and safety and be very mindful, you know, of a woman's wellness and what she may be going through at home or has gone through in the past that she may not even be completely aware of. So, you know, I definitely have a collaborative approach and I refer often and frequently to, you know, a group of wonderful therapists that, you know, are dedicated sex therapists, but also are psychologists that can take that time and spend that time because we often don't have that time, you know, in our traditional office space as urologists or gynecologists to investigate. So I'm really happy that you brought that up because I think it's a very, very important part, you know, of sexual health for both men and women.
What would be your message for those that are suffering in silence? Maybe someone who's too shy to talk and isn't sure where to start to get some help.
So I think the biggest thing, I think like anything, is not to be afraid to talk to somebody. You know, whether that somebody is somebody that you know personally as a friend or a confidant, to open up and share and realize that female sexual dysfunction is an extremely common problem. You know, almost a third of women will have an issue of some sort. You know, that list is long in terms of the different symptoms that women can suffer from. And not feeling labeled or being isolated in what they're experiencing. You know, I think that women in general, from a sexual health standpoint, you know, they feel like their sexuality has to be suppressed. I think there's still, you know, as much as I hate to say this, I do think that there's still a paternalistic aspect of sexuality in women, although I think it's improving in our, in women's ability to have a voice about their sexual response and need for sexual pleasure. And in general, you know, women don't do as good a job investigating, you know, what their needs are and being able to communicate those needs even to a partner. So I think the place to start is to just know that you're not alone and that many, many women, men, women that you know, what women know, are suffering as well and have problems that we can help with or try to help with. And I think opening that conversation, and I do think, though, it's the responsibility of our practitioners and physicians to open that door and not be afraid to ask. And that, you know, you have to be comfortable with the lingo and the terms and make the time. And, you know, in this day and age of medicine, I think that's hard to do, but I encourage physicians and practitioners to do that, to ask the questions, because sometimes if you don't ask, a woman, a patient isn't going to feel comfortable opening up. I do think the internet is a safe place and there's so much good and there's some not so good information, but there's so much good information out there that women can become educated on, you know, the problems that exist. They can feel like they're not alone with some of these sites that are out there, especially some of the pain disorder sites, you know, like vaginismus. You know, people will go undiagnosed for decades and then realize, oh my gosh, I have this disorder and all these other women have this disorder and there's something that I can do about it. Or lichen sclerosis, you know, I have this scar and I have this pain and no one can help me. And oh my goodness, you know, there are other people that have this too. And so I think the internet is a powerful tool. And so I, you know, I encourage women to go to, you know, societies like the American Urologic Association, ACOG, you know, which is the OBGYN society, you know, listen to educational forums and podcasts and read and educate. And then finding dedicated practitioners and physicians that are advocates for sexual health and that are open to those conversations and are going to ask the difficult questions and have the time to listen. And maybe they're not the right person to help all the time, but finding the right person that can offer some solutions, whether that be counseling or medication or physical therapy. And I encourage women to be brave in opening that line of communication, you know, whoever it's with, because you're not alone and it's extremely common. and that there are things that we can do to help, which is really wonderful.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up the interview today?
No, other than I'm just really happy to have the opportunity to participate in the webcast, because again, as an advocate for sexual health in general, you know, for everyone, you know, men, women, our whole LGBTQ community, I just am really happy that we're having these conversations, because I think that is the most important thing. And just encouraging people to have, you know, the strength of talking about what problems they may have and seeking the help that they need, and getting to the right people that can provide that care. So no, but thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
You've been listening to Dr. Karen Boyle of Chesapeake Urology out in the Baltimore, Maryland region. And I want to thank Dr. Boyle for being a part of today's program.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association. For more information on today's topic and for all things urology health, visit urologyhealth.org. That's urologyhealth.org.